we'll wind this up. We agreed that we had to make a choice between what we understood the state of Oregon to have said and what we understood some inferior federal court, other than the Supreme Court, to have said, and that if we were wrong, it was going to be reversed. And we could see that coming just as easily as we could see anything, but we had to make a choice. And I think we guessed wrong, but and then in at least one case, one criminal case, see if I can say this quickly without spending too much time on it. The issue was whether the crime of sexual abuse was a lesser included offense of rape. And I ruled that it was not, because the crime of sexual abuse required, or I'm not sure it was sexual abuse, but sexual something or other, forgotten what it was called. The lesser charge had an element that wasn't in the greater charge, and that was the element that the conduct was engaged in for the purpose of gratifying the sexual desires of either the actor or the victim. And that's not a part, that's not a condition of rape. And Supreme Court of Oregon, or maybe it was the Court of Appeals, I don't know, that got to the Supreme Court, said, well, that's silly, you know, of course rape is for the purpose of sexual gratification. Well, not necessarily. Now, we know a lot more about rape. Rape is a political tool in parts of Africa. And you can't tell me that these people are just going around indulging their sexual appetites. It's a, and that rape is not a sexual crime. It's a crime of violence and degradation. Well, they said I was wrong, but the next time the issue came up, they distinguished it and said, we don't think that this is quite like that case, but besides, we've seen that other case of ours criticized in law review articles and so forth, and we're not going to follow it. So there are times when you had the last laugh.
How did, if there was a change in the, well, I'm about to ask a bad question, so let me try again. The relations between lawyers, was there a change over time in terms of how lawyers interacted with one another? Did, you know, professional interactions get worse or did they get better? Was there any sort of change in that area during the time you were on the bench? And if so, what was that change?
Well, that's difficult for me to answer because I wasn't privy really to the how they were interacting with each other except in the courtroom. Now, there was a lot of posturing and a lot of claiming, suggesting to the jury that this other lawyer is trying to pull the wool over their eyes and that he's, you can't trust this guy and so forth, to the point where often after the jury had gone out, I said, you know, the trouble with the reputation of the legal profession is that the jury hears you talking this way about each other and they believe both of you. I mean, you know, but I don't know. I I think from what I've heard from members of the bar that the legal fraternity isn't on as fraternal a basis as it was back in the days when there were fewer of us and so forth. But that'd be just from what that'd be just anecdotal as far as I'm concerned. I don't know. Maybe these guys were. I used to be irritated with the lawyers for the way they'd carp at each other, and so I can't answer your question.
How about relations between attorneys and judges? Did you see a shift in how those relationships tended to be over the years? Did the level of civility go down, or did things change? What do you recall about that?
No, I don't. I don't. The lawyers were always very kind to me, and the two or three times I can recall where some lawyer, obviously under stress or he wouldn't have done it, has made some remark to me in the course of a trial that but I never reacted to it. There was an instance where some exasperated lawyer said something under his breath to one of my colleagues, and the colleague made it. He should have had selective deafness at that point. He shouldn't have heard that. I mean, when you hear, I made a rule not to hear things like that. He sentenced him to found him guilty of contempt. And I thought, boy, that's looking for trouble, you know. That just makes trouble for everybody. Make a few allowances for the guy that is just under tremendous stress as a lawyer trying this case. One time a lawyer made a motion or asked after the jury had gone out, maybe I sent the jury out so he could argue the objection or something, and I ruled against this particular lawyer, and he says, well, I'm not surprised, Judge, because you haven't ruled in my favor on anything in this trial up to this point. And I just looked at him and said, we're going to take a recess. And I walked off the bench. And pretty soon I told my bailiff or law clerk, I sometimes had one, sometimes the other, go out and see if they're all... Everything's all ready to go, and they were ready to go. But even if I couldn't pretend that I didn't hear it, I never reacted to it. I think you have. It's like an umpire in a baseball game. You can't throw every manager out of the game just because he comes and takes issue with you on how you made that call. He's got to cross a certain line, and I never let it get that far. I just said, fortunately, I could call a recess, and that's what I did.
When did you retire from the Lane County Circuit Court bench?
October 1st, 1989.
And why did you retire? As of October 1st of 1989?
Well, it was 3 days. On the 4th of October, I was 66 years old. And you usually retire at the beginning of a month or the end of a month or something. And my wife was teaching school, and I sat down one time and figured up what we would have if we retired and what we would have if we're working, and there wasn't much difference. She didn't want to retire. She was younger than I, and she worked for a couple more years. But the whole thing, it had ceased to be as much fun. And I don't know, I've got there, the judges still down there that have got a lot more years in than I ever did, and they tell me they still find it fun every day, but to me, it ceased to be fun. It was obvious that, well, I just, I can think of things that people told me when I would talk to them about retiring. They'd say, well, for one thing, remember this, every year that you work that you don't really have to and without enjoying it, you lose a year of retirement, and the year that you lose is the best of all the years of retirement you're going to have, because you're the youngest at that point. It isn't like losing one now when I'm almost 85. At 66, I still skied regularly, I sailed regularly, I had a lot of fun, and I think I did the right thing for me. And somehow or other, maybe I had a string of cases that that were kind of ho-hum, and that didn't. If I'd been a federal judge and had. I don't know whether their cases are any more interesting than mine, probably a more greater variety. But when I figured out that I wasn't getting paid for working, and that, and of course you don't know whether you've got 3 years or 20 more. And I remember one judge up in Salem, who wouldn't quit because he was having a feud with the public employees retirement system as to how much retirement he ought to get, was entitled to. And by God, he wasn't going to quit until they acceded to his request. Well, they finally did, and he took a trip with his wife down into the Caribbean and dropped dead. So that wasn't the wisest thing to do either.
What did you do after you retired? How did you occupy yourself?
Well, I had my wife and I had built a house over on Wohink Lake, and which I still own. And since she was free in the summer, we spend most of the summers over there, and most good many of our weekends all year long over there. And but in the wintertime, I went skiing quite frequently, usually just up to Willamette Pass, because I could go up there for the day and still be home if my wife had plans for the evening. I had a little sailboat on Wohink Lake. We traveled. We took some nice trips. It's not so unusual these days, but we did that. We were, I used to tell people, if I had any more money, I'd be living better than I ever have before, and I don't need that, you know. And another thing that I used to say was, I have enough money to do the things that I really want to do. And there probably are a bunch of things that I don't care about that I couldn't afford to do, but I don't worry about the fact that I can't afford to do them because I don't really want to do it anyway.
Yeah.
So what I want to do, I can do. And we always went to a lot of concerts. I still do. Have season tickets to all the musical things like the symphony and the Mozart players and all these. I read a lot. Life was more fun when my wife was alive because it's not as much fun doing these things by yourself. But we had a good time. We enjoyed each other's company and so I don't have any complaints about the way the retirement has turned out, and I've been very fortunate to have had good health throughout.
And it sounds like you also have, even though you had a busy judicial career and then before that law practice, you're able to bring up some wonderful children who are successful people now as well.
Well, they seem to be, and I have... I feel very gratified that, notwithstanding their poor choice of a father, they seem to be doing all right.
So, Judge Spencer, we've come to the end of our sessions, and we've got a little bit more tape here. But is there anything else you'd like to add to your oral history that we didn't cover?
No. I wonder sometimes, and I expressed when I used to go to the Inn of Court meetings, I expressed during one of the discussions we had there, I wondered out loud whether the state court system would be subsumed by the federal court system. There is such a discrepancy in salaries. I don't think there's anybody in the federal system, probably. Including your bankruptcy judges and lower echelons of federal judges who don't make more than the Chief Justice of the Oregon Supreme Court. And maybe that's inevitable. And then, of course, your retirement system is such that in the federal court, judges can continue to work as they choose into their senior judgeship, and there are a variety of ways in which they could serve, so that I might have been able in the federal system to have continued to serve in some capacities from time to time, even though one of the my primary motivation if not retirement, at least in cutting off my senior judging, was my hearing problems. But I suspect that there are matters of ruling on motions and so forth that a senior judge in the federal system could do, and handle arguments on motions and so forth. That is more flexibility, in other words, for a judge to work in. But primarily I'm thinking of the resources that you have. The judges have law clerks. They have able law clerks. They have whatever they need. They travel first class. I guess, and of course, Congress never boxes. I know they complain about their salaries sometimes and say we don't have enough money to educate our children and so forth. They pretty much get what they need, what they want. They have first class facilities. You know, the Lane County Circuit Court is still in the same building that they were in when the federal courthouse, before the present federal courthouse, was built. And the voting public, the political system is such that voters have more of a control over state taxes than they do over federal taxes. So there's a lot of reasons why the state judiciary is impoverished and the federal system goes first class in every respect and ought to. But with that kind of a discrepancy, I'm just wondering if, as time goes on, the ability of the state courts to do what they need to do will be lessened, and people will say, well, we'll just solve this problem by putting them into the, making it all federal. And I don't know, that may be a century or two down the road, but that's too bad, I think. And state judges do tend to feel like poor relations a little bit in the judicial business.
Well, Judge Spencer, with that, I want to thank you for your time in telling us about your life and your career. And so thank you for taking the time. I very much appreciate it.
Well, thank you. You've done a good job with prompting me.